This particular chapter from the Bhagavad Gita, which is a marvelous one, a little smoke puffed away, a little rust rubbed away, or an embryo waiting to be born which can't be hurried by any act of will. This comes in the Gita right after other very well-known passages, especially Arjuna says to Krishna, "Why is it," he says, "that even though we know better, we act wrongly?" And of course, the whole idea of the devil and of Satan comes out of living experience. We know better, but we act wrongly as if impelled by a force that has nothing to do with us. I was remembering recently the mid-1970s, which I remember very fondly for all the positive things that happened. And I was remembering just a little excursion I took in the middle of my devoted life to the spiritual path. And I cannot conjure up even the slightest feeling of why I would have thought that was a good idea. But at the time, I just went gallivanting around for a while, and I just came back. I mean, I never actually left the path. I never actually did anything wrong. I just sort of took a holiday from my life. And what's so odd about it to me now is, why did I do that? And I can't think why I would have, except it seemed like a good idea at the time. That's the only thing I can think of. But when I hear I hear Arjuna ask Krishna, why is it? What is it that takes us over? Now, I can expound at great length, and I have expounded at great length, about the law of karma and the vrittis and the chakras and how every action is like this and the jiva and the astral body, and all this stuff. I can say it all really well, and I've heard Swami say it much better. And there you have it. We can chart the metaphysics of it. But the much more interesting question is what to do about it. And what to do about it in such a way that no matter how compelled we are at different times to do things that we know are not in our best interest, how we can minimize the damage and stay on the road to recovery. You know, it doesn't matter how many times we fall down, it only matters that we get up, and we only have to get up one more time than we fall down, which is actually very interesting. You think of it like it's a big number, but it isn't. It's actually one. That wonderful saying of masters, a saint is a sinner who never gave up, I recently heard, and I don't know what the source of it is, another really marvelous phrase, which is every saint has a past, and every sinner has a future. And it's not that we're trying to pull down those that we revere. It's that we need to understand that the pathway to success is not always a straight line. I'm going to repeat to you a story that I'd heard many, many times. Swamiji told this story, and recently I just heard it again on a recording. But it struck me even more powerfully than it had ever struck me before. This is a story Master used to tell, and it was about an Indian holy man named Sadhu Haridas. And I don't think he lived very far in the past. He's not an ancient figure. And he was greatly revered, and the story that Master tells about him is he was on a boat with some Christian missionaries, and the Sadhu Haridas was talking to them about what do they think is so special about Jesus compared to all the holy men in India. And the missionary said, well, for one thing, he could walk on water. And Haridas said, oh, is that all? So he stepped off the boat and he began to walk on the water, and whichever way he walked, the boat was compelled to follow him regardless of what the captain wanted. Then he just stepped back on the boat. So he was a man of tremendous ability. But at some point, he became infatuated with a woman, even though he was a sannyasi. He became infatuated with a woman. He left his ashram. He left his disciples. He went off to be with that woman for a time. How long a time is not said, but after a while, he realized that this was not really what he wanted, and he came back. And his disciples welcomed him back, and Master said he became fully liberated. Let me just think about that. Here's a man with this kind of power, and yet he falls in love with a woman and leaves everything, but then realizes his mistake and comes back. And overcomes it so completely as to become fully liberated in that lifetime. The reason that story is significant is I feel that a great deal of the time when we do not have faith in our own future or our own present as disciples is not because we have actually erred in such a way that it matters, is because we have a false idea of what spirituality really looks like. And I think some of the adventures that Swami Kriyananda went through in his life, which I chronicled as much as I could in the book, The Light Bearer, that I published, all the struggles he had with his guru bhais, the litigation that was put against him, the attempt at character assassination, his own openness about the ups and downs of his own life. I think the purpose of living in that manner and showing us a life like that is to show us the difference, to show us what the path really looks like. And we lose touch with, even Master had his discouraging moments. There was a time at Mount Washington when everything was going so badly that he moved away for 3 or 4 days and just told Divine Mother to just kick them all out. And he came back and everyone had left. There was another time in his mission in America where people, I believe it was after he had been betrayed and there'd been a lawsuit and he'd lost the lawsuit and all the work that he'd put in for so many years had just been erased by human antagonism. And the problem is, it's described as he went on a vacation to Mexico. But that's not what Master actually said he did. He just wiped the dust of America off his shoes and went to Mexico without ever knowing whether he was going to come back. I mean, so we're talking about the conditions of human life, even for those who are deeply dedicated. It's just, We are compelled against our will, as it were, or against our knowledge of our true destiny. We are compelled. Master was in Mexico. He talked to Divine Mother and then came back. But I think it's important to know that he didn't know whether he was going to come back. Swami went to Hawaii once and didn't know if he was going to come back. It was just, the whole thing was too much. All the debts and the litigation and the antagonism and the betrayal, it was just too much. Swami spent, decades of his life coming to peace with the way he was treated by his own guru bhais. Not merely, he loved them, he never stopped loving them. But their antagonism toward him affected his confidence in what he was doing. And so he was constantly having to go back and reaffirm his relationship to Master in the light of the condemnation of those he respected most in the world spiritually. This is life. In the Gita, when Arjuna asked Krishna that question, Krishna answers, he said, it is desire and anger that compel us. And that's why the Gita has lasted and will last forever. Desire and anger, very simple. I want something. I'm not completely content in myself. I want something. I want this person to approve of me. I want to be successful in this way. I want to meditate better. I want to not become impatient. I want to not be who I am. We have a desire. And when desire is frustrated, we become angry. And then anger leads and so on until all discrimination is lost. And then all discrimination is lost. And we think we're being more true than ever, but we're not. We've just become totally confused. And the Gita also says, and it's so beautifully expressed, it's when we are manifested from the divine, and who knows why or who knows how, it's just way beyond my capacities to really explain that. But we find ourselves apparently separate from God, then we begin to enhance that separateness, just like we talk about the little analogy of the bird. The bird begins to enjoy its separate power. But as soon as we're separate and have identified ourselves with that ego, then this deep sense of insecurity and fear sets in. Because we know, our soul knows, that we don't have enough power to keep ourselves safe. So then we get compelled, and this is Rajoguna, is how Krishna puts it, the activating force. We keep trying to do things to make us safe. You know, whether it's to improve our self-esteem or improve our position in the eyes of the world or have more money or have more power, more strength, whatever it is, we just keep trying to make ourselves okay. And it's not going to happen. Because what we really have to, the only way that security is ever going to come to us is when we relinquish the sense of separateness and are able to merge into God. But we, and this is where the vrittis in the spine and all the karma come into play, there's just these forces, these long-held desires that are we just believe in them too deeply. We know maybe in the dimmest theoretical sense that this is not true, but it's very much a theory. It's not really a realization. And so then the Gita goes on to talk about there's, you know, these different kinds of delusions that we're living with. And some of them are very, very light. It's just, oh, just a little bit of a thought of that would be nice. But then our higher self just comes in and literally like a puff, just goes like that. Some little thought and it goes away. And we all live with little ideas like that all the time. They just rise up and this might be a good idea. No, not really. I'm not really going to do that. I'm not really going to follow through on that impulse. It arises, but it's so easy to push it aside. We just push it aside. Then there's the middle group of them. And the middle group of them are the ones where we just have to keep working. We're saying here in the reading that a little bit of effort will get the rust off the mirror, but I don't know if you've ever tried to get rust off a mirror. It's really not quite so simple as that. And here, what is so important to understand is, here's the Bhagavad Gita. It's telling us, it's saying to us, there's nothing wrong with us. We're not failing. You know, just because some of our impulses can be puffed away with one breath, that doesn't mean that that's how we're supposed to be. We just, it's so hard to accept, and I say this so passionately because thinking about my little excursion in my 20s there and the fact that it made so much sense to me at the time and it makes no sense to me at all at the moment just reminds me. It just reminds me that what we can intellectualize and what we can actualize, there's this space in between. And our success on the spiritual path, what do I mean by success? Our even-mindedness, our capacity to remain even-minded, confident, not panicky about our own spiritual state is inherent in these three kinds of delusion. All of us are going to be compelled because at some point or another, I've been reading a biography of Edgar Cayce. Edgar Cayce lived until 1945. He was what they called the sleeping prophet because he would go into trance and he would tell people about their lives and about their physical bodies and about their past lives. And, you know, not everything that Cayce says completely lines up 100% with Master, but it's the same teaching. He was tuned into the same reality. And he just, all these people, where they've been, what they've done, what happened to them before, why they're meeting now. You know, Casey himself was in Atlantis, and he was in Egypt, and then he was here. And then all the people that he's meeting now, they were in Atlantis, and they were in Egypt, and they were all trading relationships, and they were loving each other and betraying each other and occasionally murdering each other, you know, and then every once in a while living nicely together. But just how many thousands of years here we are again? This is very complicated, because at some point along the way, it seemed like a good idea. It just did. And somehow we thought, if I do that, I will feel better and I will be happier. And when we get those fixed thoughts in our minds, they don't dislodge easily, because Satan is very clever. Master remarked that the reason we have reincarnation is not because our lives are such a disaster. It's because they almost work. Worldly life almost works. So we don't notice for millions of incarnations that it's the whole system that's wrong. We just think it was one little part. So we have desired this, we didn't get it, that makes us mad, so I'm going to want this, and then I'm going to get that, and that's going to make me happy, but that didn't quite work, and that's annoying, so I'm going to get this. So then we find ourselves with, when we finally put our feet on the spiritual path and realize that, oh, I see what's going on here. I was traveling in Los Angeles with some friends once, and they gave me the map to read, which was really a bad idea. And I led us on an hour and a half journey to the right address in the wrong city. We were trying to find Swami's lecture, and I took us right to the same street, but it was the wrong city. So we arrived, of course, by the time we got it all straightened out. But my friend, who was good-natured about it, basically said, "I understand now, you're reading the map upside down," he said. "You fooled me for a while." As I still remember how he said it. "You fooled me for a while, but now I figured it out." And that phrase in my mind and the way he said it, I often think that's what we say to Divine Mother at a certain point. "You fooled me for a while, but now I figured this out." But even when that decision is made, we have different depths of commitment to our false ideas of what will make us happy. And Divine Mother doesn't really care. And the Masters don't even care, because every saint has a past. They all went through it. They understand, yeah, this is the process. And now you're trying to get the rust off the mirror, but the embryo in the womb, you're just going to have to outlast it. And when we begin to find ourselves just compelled and entrapped by these many different levels of delusion, we're not doing anything wrong at all. In fact, we're doing a great deal right. Because look, I've noticed. I mean, this is just such a huge step. I've noticed that even though I still want this, I know it's not going to make me happy. And Swamiji, in his reading, gives us this final wonderful thought, which is, even if you cannot resist, he said, never, never surrender the full consent of your will. This is a very interesting way to put it. That's, in the truest sense, that's actually what Tantra practice is, where one may follow a certain path but holds the mind aloof. It's all completely confused nowadays, so I probably really shouldn't have even mentioned the word. But it's not to indulge. It's rather than when one finds oneself compelled, as if against one's will, by desire and anger and all of those things, keep one tiny part of you separate, knowing, well, we're doing this now, but we won't be doing this forever. And even if it is the full term of the baby in the womb, it will end. I remember once when this man at Ananda was caught up in the most unbelievable cascading series of difficult karma. It was really very, very dramatic. In the early years of Ananda, as a joke, sometimes we would give our friends the most dramatic karma of the year award. And there was a little footnote on it that said, although there is no actual prohibition against winning this 2 years in a row, it is not recommended. Because, I mean, things would happen, driving off the road and being saved by a little bush, you know, that keeps you from plunging into the canyon. Things happen. But when this man was saying to Swami, just like, you know, what else could go wrong? I mean, what should I do? And Swami's answer, it was wonderful. He said, eventually, all karma ends. And that was all he could say, because it was the baby in the womb. I've never been pregnant myself, but women who have been pregnant say that those last few weeks can be very long, just because there's just so much going on in your body. It's very hard to be normal, and you think it's never going to end. You think when you have a colicky infant, it's never going to end. And we think when we're sick in bed, it's never going to end. We think when we're tormented by God knows what, it's never going to end. But all karma ends. And if we hold just that little bit away, if we keep even just the tiniest part of ourselves, saying, God, I don't have the capacity to not be like this. And I'm not just talking about, you know, just sailing off into the night, going on little excursions, doing things that you shouldn't do. I just mean sinking into a mood, being caught one more time in a false expectation where you want somebody to respond to you in a certain way. And what do you know? For the millionth time, they don't. And then there we are again, just heartbroken and sad and all of this. You know, but it's the baby in the womb. As long as we keep some part of us conscious of it, and where we can, we scrub on the rust. You know, where we can. And sometimes, I remember I was in a difficult situation, and then all of a sudden it just went away. And I said, Swamiji, you know, it went away. And he said, I loved this. He said, well, maybe the karma's finished, because it was with another person. Maybe the karma's finished. And he let that stay long enough for me to go, yippee, you know, like that. I didn't actually say it, but there was a huge yippee coming out of me. But before I got there, he said, but I don't think so. Maybe the karma's finished, but I don't think so. But his answer has been enormously helpful to me ever since. But you've taken it as far as you can go for now. He said, you've done everything you can. It's like, I mean, I've worked on the equivalent of rust on the mirror in the physical world, where I just take it as far as I can take it. And there's more to be done, and there's more to be done by me, but I just can't do it. I'm finished for now. Maybe I don't have the right tools. Maybe I have to go get more solvent. Who knows what it is? So Swami said, maybe it's finished, but I don't think so. But you've taken it as far as you can go. You have to grow in other ways before you're going to be able to come back to it. Maybe you'll come back directly to that person. Maybe you'll come back to the same situation. But whenever I hit the wall, and let me think how many times I've hit the wall, how many numbers are there in the universe? So whenever I hit the wall, I used to just think, oh, there's no hope. And now I think, well, maybe the karma's over, but probably not. But I've done all I can do right now. So let me go work over here. Every saint has a past. Every sinner has a future. I mean, really, you need to tattoo that on your wrist, and every time you feel discouraged, you need to look at it. And you also have to know, some karmas are ripe to be overcome. Some are almost ripe to be overcome. And some are just going to have to wait until we grow a little more. But we know now where freedom lies. It's impossible to overstate the power of just knowing where freedom lies. Now that we have awoken to this reality, we must constantly keep very fresh in our consciousness how important that is. At the end of Swamiji's life, no matter what he was supposed to talk about, all he talked about was meeting Master, being initiated by Master, and what it meant to be Master's disciple. It was the the bhav that Swami was in, all that lifetime of work was finished. Master had given him a commission when he was a young monk. He had obeyed his guru and fulfilled his task. He could scarcely remember any of it. But it was also an extraordinary teaching, which is when everything else is done, all the struggle, I have found my pole star. I know where freedom lies. I have put my feet onto the path. And it doesn't really matter how long it takes because all karma ends. It really doesn't matter because compared to infinity, all time is short. Now that my feet are planted, now that I have found the ray of grace that will take me home, everything else is of no importance. Let us joyfully celebrate that divine reality. God bless you.
Walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? Let come who will, but if they all turn home, your soul knows the answer. Go on alone. Follow your dream, though it lead to worlds unknown. Life's but a shadow, once our dreams have flown. What if men cry, your dream is not our own? Your soul knows the answer. Go on alone. Give life your heart. Bless everything that's grown. Fear not the loving. All this world's your own. Make rich the soil, but once the seed is sown, seek freedom, don't linger. Go on alone. Walk like a man, even though you walk alone. Why court approval once the road is known? Let come who will, but if they all turn home, the goal still awaits you. Go home.